It's our season finale of More Than That, and we're ending on a necessary note, Black men's mental health. Before we start, we want to thank Chevrolet for sponsoring this episode. Go to change.news1.com to learn how they're facilitating candid conversations about mental health and wellness.
Well, growing up, the conversation of mental health didn't exist. We knew it was people in the hood that wasn't playing with a full deck, but that's just what it was. It was like, homeboy over there is different.
That's right. So,
being in a Black household, health and especially mental health weren't really discussed. Not until I became an adult and had kids of my own and was going through my own personal situations that I recognized, like, hey, I'm going to try it out. You know, it's very important for me to articulate that to my children, that as humans, we all have feelings. And if we choose to ignore those feelings, then you'd start to feel unbalanced. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to feel those feelings. That's real.
I grew up in the South Bronx. The toughest dude in the hood is the one who get the respect. All of this stuff, and the fact that you have to armor up, and I'm talking about put on a mental armor, that becomes our norm.
Yeah, society teaches us a lot of things the wrong way. And it's hard to discern what's right and what's not right, especially if we look to society. Society has decided masculinity is toxic, period. Any form of masculinity is toxic. You know what I mean? I'm not going to stop being masculine because society decided that. It's not going to happen. So it's kind of like each individual has to decide for themselves, like, what masculinity is.
And most men, we're taught from a very early age to safeguard your feelings. We're taught from a very early age that the power's in strength and being a quote-unquote man. And this is just an older version of myself speaking. It ain't normal. Like, the lives that we have to live, the way that we are looked at, the way we're treated, it's not normal. And it all plays into the same mental health discussion that we're having right now and why it's so important to have these conversations.
Facts.
With one another.
That's right.
And if you can do that, then moving forward, you know, it becomes a lot easier.
Welcome back to More Than That. For our last episode of the season, we are sharing the stage with a few of our brothers who are leading the conversations about Black men's mental health and building spaces for our community to heal. The voices you just heard were Elijah Ellis, Sean Prez, and Jarrell Williams, who kicked us off by sharing their insights and experiences on this important topic. Now, we'll go deeper as we talk to TV host and author Mike Hill and therapist and content creator Keir Gaines about their journey to vulnerability, how they are overcoming mental health struggles, and ways to facilitate healing among Black men. All right, Mike, thank you so much for being here and joining us. This is our last episode of the season, and we rarely get to hear about the journeys of Black men as they are healing because it is private, right? Like, it's something that we're all learning how to do. So thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me, Jill. Appreciate you having me on the show.
Of course. Now, just for our show purposes, when you say Mike Hill, like, what do you do? And, you know, how Black people know you?
Well, it depends on who it is. Now, if it's a Black man, I'm like, oh, you probably know me from ESPN, from Fox Sports. You know, I've been on television for 25, 27 years. Now, if it's a Black woman, I'm like, oh, you probably know my ex-wife. You know?
Also true. Probably watching Housewives.
But I'm also at a point in my life where I'm actually just myself. You know, I'm telling you who I am. I'm trying to get to my point where, like, taking some of the good and trying to scrape off any of the bad that happened to me over the last couple of years.
I love that. I'm really, one, thankful that you are open about your journey to mental health, which I think is so powerful to hear you say. What were some of the biggest issues that you were facing and dealing with to the point where you're like, you know what? I need to get therapy for this. I need to get help for this.
Yeah, just a lot of traumas. I mean, just the same traumas that a lot of Black men have gone through that we suppress over a period of time for so many years. I've always been raised like, okay, we're going through something, don't cry. Man up, you know, don't tell people about your feelings. one of the reasons why I actually even came out and told people about my journey is because I want to help future generations understand that this is not the way to be a man. This is not how you're supposed to be a man. Having multiple women while you got a wife at home is not being a man. But that's the way I was taught. That's the way a lot of our black men, a lot of men, period, I should say, shouldn't say black men, a lot of men, period, are taught to be that way. But some of my traumas that I went through, Gia, like, I mean, you got to think about this. When one of my first memories of my life is seeing and hearing my mom getting her kick. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, the domestic violence. A lot of my friends getting caught up in the drug game. I mean, these are all these traumas that we grow up with that you have learned to suppress for so many years. But eventually, all that is going to boil over and come to a point where you got to release it. My journey didn't become the journey that I'm on right now until about 4 or 5 years ago when I found myself putting this mask on, smiling because I got a great job. People knowing who I am. I've been on television for so many years and I got money in my pocket and doing all that type of stuff, smiling. I'm always the happy person trying to make everybody else happy. And then at night, I'm sitting in my house or in my hotel room if I'm on the road and I'm crying uncontrollably and I don't know why I'm crying. And something inside of me said, well, you got to release this. And that's when I wrote my book, Open Mic. And as I was writing, all these thoughts and all these memories started coming out and I started releasing and started letting it go. The tears were coming out and flowing, but they were tears of joy because I started feeling like I had lifted like at least 150 pounds off my chest. I kind of got all of it out and I realized, man, all this stuff that has been building up inside of me has literally been killing me for years. And if I would not have released it, gee, I would not be talking to you right now. But that wasn't the end of the journey. After I let it go, you realize that there still is some residual effects that you don't get rid of. And that's where the therapy comes in. So I always tell people that writing my book was the surgery I needed. The therapy afterwards was a rehab. What mental health and what therapy does is tell you the reasons why.
Imagine the future of Black masculinity, where everywhere is a safe space and grace is in ample supply. Picture Black men healing their inner child and smiling bright, representing Black joy, unapologetically happy. A future where you define the words, be a man for yourself, seeking, giving, and receiving help when you need it, while rediscovering, understanding, and appreciating all that you truly are. It's important we talk about the safe spaces Black men can access to put their well-being and mental health first. Learn how Chevrolet is facilitating candid conversations that drive real change at change.newsone.com. Okay, more than that, family, I'm so honored to have a friend, a fellow DC brother native. You've seen him go viral a million times, but he's a therapist, content creator, a dad, a husband, and just a really dope human being. We're here with Keir Gaines. Sir.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get into this conversation. I love talking to you, Gia.
I love talking to you, and I love talking to you about Black men's mental health because you are someone who is very open about getting through life, going through life, and then healing through life as well.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
Talk to me about, like, you grew up in Southeast. Like, tell me about young Keir, what he was like, and kind of what brought you to this space you're in now.
Yeah. What was young Keir like growing up in Southeast DC? For those that don't know, Southeast is probably the most economic distressed quadrant of Washington, DC. At least pre-gentrified Southeast was. Now they got mad Starbucks. Still poverty, but mad Starbucks. You know, my mom was a writer. She loved music. So in my house, there was all this love and music. And my family's from the South. So we didn't have a lot of money, but we always had food. And we made ends meet. And it made sense inside my house, but I lived in a trap. So outside, there were so many examples of things that were just counterintuitive to what was going on around me on the inside. And I didn't really want to be that. I didn't connect with it. But as a young boy, you have to survive in that environment. And the only thing you can do to not be afraid all the time is to become the boogeyman.
Wow. Okay. So you're going through that time and you said you grew up in a household with a lot of love, a lot of food, a lot of fun, it seems like. But were there examples of Black men who were healing or at least trying? Or what was your first understanding of vulnerability when it came to Black men?
Wow, I don't think I've ever been asked that question before. No, there were no examples of Black men expressing vulnerability in my life at all. I had a male teacher maybe in fifth grade. That was about it. I think the first time I ever expressed I ever felt a level of vulnerability or connection with a Black man was when a friend of mine's dad gave me a ride home in middle school. We had a really long conversation. And I think that's the first time that it ever happened.
Wow. Do you remember what it was about? Like, what made you feel safe?
It was about music, I think. And you just said feel safe. It's so interesting because that's not a priority for me. I never really feel safe. Ooh. I never feel safe. I don't understand what that means. In theory, I do. Of course, I'm a therapist, but in practice, I can't say that I connect with that experience.
Boy, you done said so much. Okay, I got so many questions. Okay, safe, huh? Safe space? I would say our generation's greatest contribution is that we're taking the taboo away from actually practicing and getting to know yourself through the lens of mental health. Mm-hmm. Not funny. It's not a joke. It's not woo, woo, woo.
Sure.
And safe space is our terminology that we use all the time. Thank you for making me realize that okay, you might not ever feel safe. Because I understand as a Black woman in this country, yes, there is a certain time I don't really 100% ever feel safe. But when I'm with my family, I feel safe. I feel good when I'm at home. Like when you say you never feel safe, break that down for me. When do you feel the closest to that and why?
The closest that I feel to safety is typically when I'm at home with my wife and my kids. I still can't say I always feel 100% safe. I think growing up, we celebrate the trap a lot and we celebrate the projects because there is some fetish between the Black identity and struggle. There's some people that think you're not Black if you didn't struggle. But there's something about that unique struggle, even though people wear it as a badge of honor, that when you leave it, it stays with you. Just because your body is out of that situation, that doesn't mean your mind came all the way with it. I think it's just this issue of what the world tells you when you're a Black man. And like when you're 13 and you no longer got a boy's body, you now have a man's body, and the law treats you like a threat, and women treat you like a threat, and your mama treats you different, and other boys and men look at you different. It's sometimes like society tells you who you are before you have a chance to define it for yourself. And it's just stepping into that realization and understanding that when I talk to men and when I approach the men, it helps me understand where they're coming from, see eye to eye, and try to address this thing in language that they can read, for sure.
In language that like helps them reclaim their own identity, like reclaim how they want to be seen in this world. Because I love that you pointed out that, the society tells you who you are, but now you're helping Black men find the language to define who they are for themselves. But there's also a lot of Black men who just have anxiety about starting their healing journey.
Oh, yeah,
and
no
like,
doubt.
I'm sure you get this question a lot. Where have you recommended that Black men should start their healing journey?
I think starting with community is beautiful. Starting with community that not only tells you the things that validate you, but that pushes you sometimes, you know, or tells you the hard things. And men build different, just on average, in my experience, men build friendships far differently than women. There are Black men who grew up in single mom households raised by mostly women. And sometimes I find when they come to the office, they norm the things they do on the way that women communicate with each other, the way women build community. Like they'll say something like, I don't have intimate relationships with my friends. And I'll have a conversation with them. And what we'll find out sometimes is, well, your level of intimacy with your friends is different than your mom with her girlfriends. It's different than your sister with her homegirls. Those relationships look different. Sometimes in men's intimacy is, hey, bruh, it's the long dap, hey. Get home safe, dog. It's that extra 2 seconds. You know, it's very implied. It's very implicit. It's just normed very differently. I think it's finding that community and just being open to the different ways that community can look. It's happening. When we speak about Black men and healing, we speak as if we're in the same place we were in 2001. We don't often speak to Black men's progress in mental health. Or me having Black men as clients. Black men are amazing clients.
We don't often talk about the intimate ways Black men do show up for each other. So how can Black men create an openness for dialogue with young boys who are struggling to acknowledge their own pain and struggles?
I think it's two-part. I think one is tapping into your own childhood. It's mad alarmist when we come to these young men sometimes. Instead of sitting and listening, to his experience and not invalidating it because he has the internet and it's easier for him, and not invalidating it because his clothes are tighter, he's soft, or he may have a nail painted, so you're questioning his sexuality. We do not see the world eye to eye at all. But I think just meeting those young men where they are, which is, I know I keep saying it, but it's a theme here, and listen and tap into not where you are now, but where you were at that time. And if he needs advice, give it to him. If he needs wisdom, give it to him. But practice warmth. Being warm doesn't make you soft. And I think a lot of young boys need warmth, but a lot of grown men never got warmth. So it's a muscle they haven't exercised. And you can't be strong in a place where you don't exercise. So it's hard to deploy that to him. But I think those things bundled up be a really good start for our young men.
Yeah.
That's what I think of when we think of like the next step in manhood, or just a new concept for us to adopt into the concept of masculinity.
What do men, in your experience for romantic relationships, what makes you feel safe and vulnerable and seen in your relationship?
There's a few things my wife does, and it hasn't always been this way. We just got here where we understand that the person ain't the problem. But the problem is the problem. We've moved to this space where I can disagree with her and she doesn't make me feel bad for it. Aww. I don't feel blamed. I don't feel pressured. I don't feel undermined if I make a mistake. Oh, I was expecting you to lead and you messed up. Here you go. I don't get any of that. And it makes it such a comfortable place to be human. And it makes it such a comfortable place to not have all of my ducks in a row, but still feel confident in myself.
I think that is so beautiful. And you all have your sit down chats on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of people in relationships who are struggling to find and cultivate openness and communication. What would you recommend about that, like how to get to that space? Why is that openness and communication so important for Black men, especially in relationships and their mental health?
The communication is important because that's the only way you can truly know where somebody is with something. It's one thing to walk in a room and your wife has a sad face and you assume she has an attitude with you. It's another thing to walk in a room and say, baby, you okay? Just as a check-in real quick to make sure my mind is not tripping. Make sure that me and you are on the same understanding of what's going on here.
Yeah.
And also not sweep things under the rug, but address them as they come. And also really examine when you're in conflict, what your conflict language is. We always talk in love languages, right?
It's words of affirmation, physical touch, gifts.
Why the voice?
We know all the good stuff, right? How do you operate in conflict? Are you a distancer? Are you a silencer? Are you an over-talker? And how are you going to accept those things about yourself, even though you may not like them? It's not so you can be evaluative and judge yourself. It's being conscientious of those things so that when they happen, you have the mechanism to put the brakes on it. Be like, I'm doing that thing. Give me a second. It's very different to point that finger at yourself and do some examination. You know, so I think that's a good start. Love always starts with you. For Black men that listen, you got to be true to yourself and you got to own every part of yourself. Every part of you deserves to be loved, not just the parts of you that you're comfortable with.
I'm so excited we did this episode because when I think about the Black men I love, from my dad to my brother to my family and friends, I want to hear more conversations that center their emotional well-being and honor their full humanity. To me, helping Black men heal also heals our whole community. It creates a mutual reciprocity that encourages a collective revival of the Black family and the Black spirit. And if we have learned one thing this season, is that when one of us is healed, healthy, and loved well, we can all truly shine. What a way to end the season. Thank you to our guest, to our listeners for tuning in to every episode, and to Chevrolet for sponsoring our season finale. Discover the candid conversations they're facilitating at change.newsone.com.